Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today I want to talk about the fundamentals of reality. How do you know this is a reality? How do you know? We're a 5-cent system at a minimum. And I think that that's what we usurp to determine that, oh no, this one's real. The more you can see, hear, touch, smell, have emotions, the more that you believe that you're alive. Right? I teach my students, when I have them, a little experiment in looking at a photograph. And it's sort of a homework piece where I say, okay, here's what you guys have to do. If you can do this with a friend or a family member, it's even better. But someone prints out a super duper high res 8x10 or bigger or better picture or image of a relative that has passed or a friend that has passed. A good picture. A picture you would like to have, you know, just continue the camera moment on. You know, it's like, oh my God, it's a great moment. Let's just live at Havasu or whatever it is. But it's got to be a very close-up face picture. Typically a portrait. And someone brings you up to the portrait or holds it up to you. You got your eyes shut. You're behaving because you want the experiment to go well. And you open your eyes and you feel yourself for the few microseconds that it's going to occur, that you believe that person has entered the room and that they're really there. And then you feel the cascade of, oh my God, they're not actually here. Now, sometimes we just do that with normal photographs for people that are alive. They're simply in a different part of the universe, right? You know, they're in Boston and you're in LA. But when they're gone from their mortal coil, never to return, it has a slightly more profound effect. And when you have slightly more profound effects, you get a much bigger blip on the radar of your consciousness. Now, when that occurs, you can start to do some pioneering, some engineering inside your mind, right? What was that? Oh my God, I don't know. I felt something. You did? Where'd you feel it? Oh, right here. What'd it feel like? Well, it kind of started off like this, and it did this, and then it did that, and then it's over, right? Eat a really hot pepper. You know, you get really excited about eating like a habanero raw, and then you smell it, and it's like, okay, it doesn't really smell like much. Then you start chewing it up, and depending on how sensitive you are, you're not really tasting anything. It's kind of a floral pepper, like a green pepper, and then all of a sudden that heat comes, ba-boom, it's that stingy habanero heat. You feel like you're going to die. And then like 5-10 minutes later, you're just swimming in endorphins, right? If we don't have large spikes in the system, sometimes we don't realize that it's happening. How do pickpockets work? Pickpockets work with abruptly touching parts of your body. This is the really good ones. And they know that your brain is getting overwhelmed with the power and interpolation of being grabbed in your, say your watch is over here on your left wrist. They're going to grab your right wrist really hard. And then they're going to grab your left wrist a little softer. Well, you're really focused on the section where they're grabbing you really hard. Meanwhile, they've got the sleight of hand to pull a watch off, a belt off, take your wallet out of your pocket. And they're always portraying themselves as something safe. Well, let me just help you out here, sir. Let me just help. You know, gosh, you know, you really look great today. Boom, 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 boom. I got everything on you. See you later, right? So when we want to figure out reality, we have to slow down our brains and start paying attention to it a lot more than we ever used to on a daily basis, on a second-to-second basis, right? Virtual reality. It's come and gone once again. It won't, I don't think, unless there's some invention we haven't seen yet, we won't see any proliferation of VR, and movies like Ready Player One are going to look like absolute relics once again. Augmented reality, that'll continue a little bit longer than VR, but I think it's seriously just going to be a nosedive into the ground once again. You can't obstruct reality from people's minds when they're crossing streets or driving cars, and therefore it is unsafe to wear outside of a safe zone, and that just kills the utility. So it's going to be interesting. The software is 20 years behind the hardware, and the hardware is way behind in itself. Like, every single object in the universe is going to have to be inside the computer. So why have this episode, right?
Why do it?
We're just going to meander around again about what is reality? Well, I'm going to try not to. What I want to get at in this episode is that it's extremely sensitive as to what is reality and what isn't reality. You know, there, most of us have had a friend that tries to hide out in, how do we say this, in their bedrooms, and they try to sleep off their entire lives, right? Young kids do this all the time when they're sort of in that rite of passage, but they're not, they don't have any ideas about how to pull that off, and so they just kind of sit at home and sleep forever. It's this bizarre thing. I did it. Really, really strange. When I was a little kid, I'd get up early, watch cartoons, mess around. It was not a problem. About the time I hit, 13, 14 years old, I would stay up really late programming and drawing and painting and all that kind of stuff, but you know, it'd be nice where I didn't stay up that late and I still just pull a 12-hour shift in my bed. My dad was military, so he's like, what the hell are you doing? You know, get your ass up. One of the things that fascinates me with people is that when I talk to individuals that have dropped acid, for instance, and they didn't have a bad trip, right, they weren't tiny kids or something trying to do it with some jerk-off adult who's messing with them, like an older brother or something like that, right? When you're, the more mature you are when you take LSD, and again, true LSD, be very careful, kids. People pawn off all kinds of weird shit as LSD, which it's not. They have this experience, and they have this one with the universe moment where everything connects. Everything connects in the universe, right? And they start to see the beauty of how everything works. They see love. They see God. They see God in the form of like fingerprints, maybe footprints. And it extends your life and calms you down, and then you do not fear death. I think I have just one friend who's done a fair amount of acid who still fears death. It's very interesting, and he's not very religious. In fact, he's not religious at all. Isn't that interesting? I don't fear death, you know, because I believe I'm just going to hop out of this universe and end up in God's palm or something. It's just an inevitable thing that I've accepted at this stage of my life. Maybe I get all freaked out when I get older. Hopefully not. But what LSD does is it helps you, and I'm sure other drugs do too. I don't have a lot of experience with other drugs, but it definitely starts to open you up to the fabric of where you are. The thing I like about LSD is even though it lasts a really long time, you know, it's probably a good 4 hours where you are just doing whatever's going to happen to you, and the rest of it's all just coasting down slowly. It would be as if you're skydiving and, you know, for 4 hours the plane is going up and you're looking out and it's just the most amazing thing. And then right about 4 hours, which is an hour into taking it because it takes a little while to start, you know, you get maybe like 6 or 7 hours, even 8, of just totally coasting down in the parachute, right? And you're completely in control. You're not ready to put your feet on the ground yet, but you're coasting down. Those moments are priceless. When trying to say, well, I'm so sure that reality is this, and then you're like, whoa, what was that? You know? And you know, acid doesn't hurt your body. That's the other thing too. Like, so weed can make you stupid, and cocaine and heroin, Jesus, what can it do? Alcohol blows out your liver, blows out most of your organs, makes you fat, gives you a DUI. Doesn't expand your consciousness, that's for goddamn sure. But LSD is like, hey. And people, for the folks that want me to take DMT, hey, I probably would. I just don't have any. So, again, anything that's, it's called the dream molecule, DMT, and it is something that grows in all things. They typically extract it out of tree bark. And there's legal ways you can take it in California, but you have to be part of a Native American tribe ceremony. And a friend of mine who's taken it several times said that it's very distracting to have them running around doing rituals and singing while you're trying to have a very solitary moment with your alien counterpart. With DMT, it's very interesting. I know a lot about it, never taken it. I've taken salvia, which I thought was a DMT-based product, but someone recently told me that wasn't true. But boy, that was a weird-ass experience as well. But it's interesting how loose the fabric of reality can be once you start to change your mind about it. And I think that the misnomer that I have had on this show and my entire life might be this. We assume that if we change our reality and our position in reality and our definition of reality and start experiencing more freedom, that somehow we're going to disturb this reality that we sort of agree on, right? You're watching the show, we seem to be in the same reality. Like we're stopping off at this island floating in space. Okay. But I think that if you were capable of changing your opinion of reality, and so was I, you're going to change it in a different way than I'm changing it, unless we're having a conversation and we're deciding, okay, let's make green red, right? Red, green, and then we're going to hit each other at the next traffic stop. But the idea is if we went together, maybe we could go into a separate Alice in Wonderland experience, go through the same mirror, hold hands. But I think that the one thing that we are afraid to do is hurt this reality. We're afraid. We got loved ones in this reality. And it's sort of like the safe zone. Hey, I want to have a psychotropic experience taking LSD. Okay. Well, I don't want to mess up my reality when I get back. I don't want to find out I'm half Fallout 4 and half, you know, Mario Brothers all of a sudden, right? I want to keep this reality intact as much as I possibly can. It's my safe zone. The gurus of India say you have a silver cord that holds you down to your body as your spirit goes out and experiences the universe. I dig that. But if that's so evident to them, why can't they give me a little herb that goes, oh my God, I'm leaving my body. Salvia was pretty good. Salvia both times brought in an alternate reality that was phenomenal. I bought salvia, which you can get, you know, it's like smoking sage. It's really sour and gross. But you buy it in a level of potency, 25%, 50%, 75%, and 100%. And it gets increasingly more expensive. But you can buy a gigantic bag of this stuff. I heard it's still legal, but then I heard it was illegal, and then I heard it was legal. Whatever. So I bought 25% because I was still yet to drop acid and still yet to just be able to know I can control an experience, right? Because you see these experiences online with people smoke salvia and then they just lose their mind. They're off to another location. With DMT, it's very similar, but DMT can only give you a trip for maybe 15 minutes and you're back and your body and you're doing well. But your body seems to get abandoned. So your soul leaves your body while you're on DMT and your body sits there in a feral animal state. So what was giving this gorilla, whatever the hell we are, its intellectual power has left the vessel. And so the vessel just sits there like it's on bath salts. And it can be violent and strange and it gets scared almost right away. So we may be a bunch of different things mixed together, right? But I smoked salvia the first time and I felt this pipe going up through, out of my chest, up through my chin, through my head, and out the top of my forehead. And it felt like silver metal. And that's just, I can't describe it any other way. And then the second time I did it, I smoked a lot more. You know, we're talking short bursts, but I smoked a lot more. And I became the union of two very elliptical spheres that were grid-like, rotating in on each other. And again, I was the union of the two. And it was like I was floating in some old house room that had nothing in it. It was like maybe a 12 by 12 room. Just kind of, maybe it was white at one point, but now it's sort of patinaed out beige. And I'm sitting there just being the thing that's between these two doodads, right? I mean, these two elliptical spheres. So very strange, right? We talk about dreams a lot on this show. You are pioneering the most amazing photoreal stuff in your brain on a whimsical basis. Just, hey, I'm going to go to sleep. Boom. Wow. Alternate reality. Dot, 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 dot. Oop, wake up. Back in this reality. Hey, you know, and that bill is still sitting there waiting for you. Even though you completely went off to another universe, everything stayed the same. the problems that you have in life could be the same, you know? I did make an episode back in season one that, if you guys like dreams, there's a whole dream playlist that's about dreamscaping, which is the notion that you can go to sleep and wake up in a slightly different reality, if not a very altered reality, that looks like this, feels like this, but some of your stuff, some of your opportunities are there that you've been waiting for, and maybe some of your problems aren't so hard. There's some solutions waiting for you because you're tuning yourself when you sleep. How many times have you had something touch your skin and it felt like a bug and you went, oh my God, and you flick it off and you realize it's some piece of furniture that's touching you, your piece of clothing. You have a hoodie and it's the tie that managed to get over here and touch you. Your hair is super long and it touches you. It was nothing. But for that brief moment, my God, there was a bug on you. If you've had a previous experience with a bug that was bad, oh man, you bring up that those emotions, you relive that experience, the pain, the frustration. One thing that's interesting about cell phones, and I'm going to harp on this just a little bit more, which is your eyes seem to dictate so much of what you consider to be reality, right? Mine too. You put a headset on, it's virtual reality. Even though it's crappy low-res headsets, within microseconds, your brain is going, this is reality. Watch out for that sofa. First time I put on an HTC Vive headset, the menuing system is you floating in space on a glass platform. Man, it was scary. I was thinking, oh my God, if the guy drops this platform, my brain is going to buy into this reality, and I'm going to be standing in a room, people watching me, screaming like, you know, Chris Hemsworth and Ragnarok as he was strapped to the chair. So I think there's two parts of this exercise. One is the hardest part, which is to make yourself oversensitive to everything that you use to believe that you are in reality. Why are you in reality? What's making you think you're here? Is it the fabric of the clothes on your skin? Is it an injury in your body? Is it whatever? A smell, some touch, something. Something you can see, obviously. All right. Now, once you've locked into this reality, and some folks are, like, I do this too, it's, if you want to study other realities, your idea may be, hey, don't accept this reality, don't accept this reality, therefore you can see the other reality. It might be the other direction. Totally get into this reality, and I mean understand it. Why is that rose over there the way that it is? It has the, you know, the Fibonacci pattern because of the ethereal winds swimming through some column, distributing all the atoms, which then eventually turn into their own individual swirls, which are biological patterns, which are petals. Get into it. Understand this one immensely. Understand why you basically buy into this reality. And then, when you're hardcore into this reality, and you experience looking at a movie on your cell phone, you watch a movie in a movie theater, you close your eyes in some place where music is playing, and you just listen, and it's taking you back to your past. It's taking you to a whole new world. I used to sit as a kid and listen to Jean Jarre, the French New Age guy, and draw. And I would just listen, like, Oxygen album, and I'd sit there and just let it become me. Same thing with Tomita. Just let it become me, and I would literally see a completely different universe. And it was beautiful. Now, the other thing is that, let me give an example. I don't think any of you watch this show, even in 4K, and feel like you're in the backyard with me. Maybe you do, but I don't think, because I put it in black and white, it's very distinctly not your reality, right? Now, when I watch old Twilight Zones, sometimes I feel like I'm in that reality. If I watch like four or five in a row, I feel like, God, that black and white world is just so enchanting. The way they shoot all these episodes, very cool. But the heightened sensitivity that you want to get to, in my opinion, is know this reality really well, and then when stuff is different, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb. You go to sleep and you have a dream, and all of a sudden you've got possessions you don't have. You can do something that you've never done before, and it's blissful, and it's like, oh my God, you know, like, I'm hoping that people that have lost limbs or, you know, are paralyzed in some case, dream that they can walk. I really hope, and run and just have a great time, stand up on their own 2 feet, hug someone, whatever it is that they don't want, or that they don't have anymore, that they have a chance to do it. But that will be, for them, a profound experience when they wake up, oh my God, I was running, I was walking, I was swimming, whatever. It's that level of sensitivity that we need every day without suffering any injuries. Then we get to the second phase of the exercise, which is, let's say that you guys are capable of doing this. You're starting to discover a bunch of little nuances. You know, you can't really write your PhD thesis on it just yet because you're just getting started, but you're definitely starting to notice things between dream, between reality, when you watch TV. And then you start to realize, oh, it's interesting how I get content that is giving me a sense of alternate reality. What are those venues? Marshall McLuhan. Okay, well, we got TV, got radio, got your cell phone, you got amusement parks, a whole bunch of different locations, mini malls, big malls. They're all trying to get you to see a different reality. Now, when you put on virtual reality, augmented reality, of course, you have a very in-your-face mechanism that says, just like Total Recall, you know, don't you want to escape this reality? And wouldn't you rather be someone else than the person that you are? It's interesting. So why go through this exercise, right? Who gives a crap what reality we're in, right? Some people might ask. Well, what's death? What is death? You know, when you ask a scientist, what is death? All you're going to get is some clinical answer based on really the most remedial amount of information about the human body that you could possibly put in a box. Well, it's when the heart stops, when the brain stops, when the body ceases to function. What happens, what's really going on there, Mr. Scientist? And what happens to me personally? Well, you die. Well, what's the definition of die? Well, you just cease to exist. Well, how can you prove that? What am I, exactly? Oh, well, you're just a bag of chemicals. Oh, so that means that you've got us completely figured out, right? If we're a bag of chemicals, the hell, that should be easy. It's a finite amount of mass and energy within a particular being. All you got to do is run a bunch of experiments, and you're going to completely figure out the brain, right, Mr. Kurzweil? Oh, you've done that, and you still don't know dick about the human brain. Interesting. Interesting. But we're so sure, especially as laymen who've never had a conversation or read a Kurzweil book, we're so sure we know what death is. We're so sure we don't have souls. Atheists, oh my, oh my, you know. Atheists attempt to defy those that they despise, thinking, well, a religious person is absolutely hysterically built their whole life on a foundation of superstition and prophecy and manipulation. And I have gone to the minimalistic, no furniture in my house, no relationship with the universe whatsoever, besides the fact that I go ashes to ashes, dust to dust. If I reverse the polarity of them, I immediately become a genius. Maybe not, Tonto. Maybe not. We're probably in the middle. We have a vessel. It's our body. Then we have a spirit that imbues it. Perhaps, again, there's two different things. DMT is a very interesting experiment because it seems to leave behind a carcass of your very being while you are most definitely in a different location from the geniuses that I know that take it. Again, I told you, my friend who's taken it the most with a massive IQ and he's extremely famous in the video game industry, he told me he won't take it again because the alien being that always becomes his host grabbed him on the last visit, put his forehead against his forehead, just kept his eyes right inside his eyes and said, "Don't come back here." Like, you're meddling in my world when you take that drug. And isn't that interesting? I don't think his body went anywhere in the universe. I think his body was still in some attic in Berkeley University. But his spirit hauled balls to wherever this creature was. And he said, look, I've taken it, you know, a dozen times, and I've always had the same alien host that seems to operate completely autonomous from anything I could have assumed he was going to do or what have you. So I really feel like he is in control of himself. He is his own unique being. A lot of people have reported the same thing. So without actually penetrating this other, any other reality in your life, once you find out that you are truly a camera, the way that you see reality is a camera, then it's whatever you're staring at any one point in time, and it's wherever you are. Are you awake? Are you asleep? Are you on LSD? Are you not on LSD? Are you in an environment where there's a tremendous amount of five-sense input? Are you in an area where there's only a couple inputs? If you go get a body massage from someplace, you typically have your eyes closed. So you're getting, your whole life is turned into sound, which hopefully has a nice soundtrack calming you down, and touch. And someone touches you, kaboom, you're having that feeling, hopefully. Every time I get a massage, I sit there and I think, you know, it doesn't matter how rich in this world I could be. If I have a good masseuse, then I'm sitting there thinking, this is what I would do if I was a trillionaire, is have someone work on me and do a really good job for about an hour, maybe 90 minutes. I leave the place and I'm just like this jello zombie. That's all I would do as a, to nurse my health on a daily basis or whatever, weekly basis, as a very, very rich person, to live like a king or a queen. It's very interesting. So what I have found is this. Once you start paying attention to the nuances and differences of reality, one, your grip on this reality starts to loosen up. Now, what happens to people when they're about to die? Not seconds before they die, but, you know, a few years before their mortality comes in place, some of them release themselves, right? They're just like, it's my time. I don't necessarily want to punch out right away, but, you know, my friends are gone, my spouse is gone, all my relatives that are older than me are gone. So it's time for me to go too. I'm going to go join them wherever they went. Hey, if there's nothing, there's pure blackness, then you won't be around to care about it. So don't worry about it, right? But the interesting evolution, I think, in the mind that hopefully we achieve as man, especially if we get some empirical data about where we might be going, is the following. Christians have told themselves a story about a place called heaven. It has a wall around it. That has a gate. And you got to do a bunch of stuff to get inside. Oh, and if you don't go into that place, well, then you go in this other place deep down in some dungeon and you're going to burn alive. That is a super duper, massively ignorant, but well-meaning slice of this human population trying to manipulate man into doing the right thing for a little while. And then probably a bunch of other stuff later. But what if we could simply say, well, it's a lot more abstract than any one pearly gates and cloud nine and all that stuff. But there's a lot of stuff out there. Some people get all worried about things like, well, if we have souls, then where do they come from? And I say, well, what do you mean? And they say, well, there's always more people on the planet every single day. Where do the souls come from? Seems like someone's making more. My answer is, there's only one soul, and it's us. And that might sound crazy, but it's not. When you hurt someone else, you're hurting yourself in a different instance of existence, which is why it never feels good to hurt someone else or to lie to someone else, because in the end, you're hurting yourself. You kill somebody, well, you're just killing yourself. That's why it feels bad most of the time, right? Now, maybe you get it wrong. Maybe you're an asshole hurting people and you get yourself killed. And then maybe even in your dying breath of being Jack the Ripper, you're like, oh, thank you for saving me from being this monster that I have turned into. And then those of you that did kill yourself as Jack the Ripper, you're like, man, I just saved the world from evil. So it's a beautiful balance there. But we have time in our brain, right? Time says, well, there can all be one thing at one time. There can't be two things of the same thing. It's like, let go. Let go. I want everyone to live in peace. Complete peace of mind, right? Obviously, there's the let's get rid of people that are attacking people sort of thing, but that's different. If you were to sit in this patio by yourself and enjoy the breeze and the beautiful flowers and all this crazy vegetation I have around me, occasioned by a Harley Davidson screaming by, I want you to feel at peace with yourself. Because there's all kinds of things you can enjoy once you feel at peace with yourself. You could become a better spouse, a better parent, a better family member, a better friend. And if nothing else, you simply can live inside your skin a whole hell of a lot easier. It's almost as if you and I both are a... I guess clay is a better way to give an example of it, but you know, you form clay into something, then you fire it up and it becomes hard and it becomes who you are. I think we're, through epigenetics, we are actually a big lump of clay, our entire existence, as a metaphor. But we allow ourselves to be fired in the kiln by political parties, right? You're a Democrat, you're a Republican, and what was pliable clay gets fired in the kiln, and we become hard and brittle and sensitive and scared. But if we just pull out of that whole game, right? Pull out of that whole game and relax a little bit. Maybe we just stay us. You know, you can recognize yourself as a human being. You don't have to. You could just be a spirit and a body visiting. You are a temporary human at best, in my opinion. And once you start waking up every single day and realizing you are a temporary human, so are your kids, so is your spouse, so is your family, so is everyone you're walking around listening to them piss and moan about one thing or the other, or being excited about something very, very relative to this world, it starts to become funny. You're like, wow, look at us. Look how we've built this reality. We did. And somebody's really excited about getting an iPhone, a new t-shirt, a boat. They went to Athens and they had their mind blown by the Parthenon. Okay, that's great. That's cute. Those are not unimportant things. But isn't it interesting to have a slightly more global perspective on those things? If I told you, again, I made this example in one of my final episodes of season 3. If I told you, you know, before we became human, it's just like the guys on the train going to Westworld for the first time, and he's telling them how it's going to be. He says, okay, we're going to get in these avatars and we're going to live a life. You're going to be this little kid. It's going to be crazy. You're going to have a hard time walking and talking, but you get to have some boobies and blah, 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 blah. And then you're going to grow up and you're going to know about this conversation, your whole existence on that planet. In the back of your mind, you're like, this isn't real. This is an avatar. I am inside some computer. Then what you see, feel, touch, and taste, and the context of all the events that happen to you, a bully on the playground, somebody honking at you driving down the street, how much does that stuff actually piss you off? You're in a video game. I mean, you want to win. You want to get as much stuff as you possibly can. You'll figure out your objective. You'll like him. You'll like her. You get this career. You don't like it. You like that one. You blow through a bunch of stuff and you're tired of it. So you go on to the next thing. But you do have a better perspective, right? That's what I want for you. The start off this year, this season, this summer, with the notion that we're not so bound ritualistically to our bodies, that we are really, and I know that gurus have much better ways of saying this kind of stuff. I haven't seen a guru talk in probably 10 years, but like a good one. But I see people so devoted to this life. And it seems as if the more that they are... Well, it's actually interesting. I see atheists who believe this is their only run in life. Like, if you're an atheist, the most interesting thing about that is, wow, there's a lot of incredibly unproductive, unfulfilled atheists in this world. And if you thought this was your only run in life, I think it's shameful to live a life that you don't go balls out. If you think this is it, you were just lucky to exist this one time, God damn, you should be, I don't know, Einstein or Elvis, like, take your pick, or the female equivalent thereof, right? But if you believe that there's some sort of cyclical thing going on here, if you're religious, you think it's one shot because they had to control humanity, but at least you get to live forever in heaven based on your deeds here on earth. Seems like the most asinine design of a supreme being ever, right? Yeah, I like to have a little pit stop area when I get off the race. I get to relax and chill out a little bit, meet some people I've never met before, see some old friends that are past, sure. But eventually I want to get back in the track and race. If you're a race car driver, you race cars, right? The idea that Christians say, well, you're just done racing. Also, I got really good at racing. Yeah, you know, you just race one time. You'll get one chance to make all the mistakes and fix them. But you live forever. But what sort of structure do we put in place when we realize that perhaps this is a cyclical thing like every other piece of energy in the universe? Everything is cyclical. You know, I water my yard that goes down into the water mantle, gets picked up by a pump, sold back to me, and I water it again, right? Everything in the world recycles except for our spirits and our souls and what we are in the universe. As it is above, so too it is below. As it is in mass and energy and ether, so too it is in soul and spirit and mind. Right? How many of you guys have tried to meditate and you can't? You sit in the room and you are like, I am not supposed to let anything interrupt me. Not a sound, not a touch, anything. And you get into whatever lotus position you can get into and it doesn't work because you're just thinking about something very specific in the room, whatever. Now, I'm going to say, use that failure of meditation as a success in the exercise of this episode. Go somewhere. Sit somewhere. I don't give a crap if you're in a chair or what have you. And when you try to hold still, close your eyes and feel and think. You don't really have to close your eyes in our exercise, but you know, start off that way maybe. As each thing interrupts your ability to meditate, I want you to recognize what is that sense. Because that is an input of your current state of being and your reality. It is the thing we want to become extremely sensitive to, such that when we start to use our minds to penetrate other realities, we can sense those changes too. Like the picture thing. If you're used to using your eyeballs to take in reality and then say, I am here, I'm in a patio versus in a desert, sitting on a rock, looking at nothing but more desert, my brain is somehow crafting this reality because it needs to, because the desert's really lonely. There's no one actually there. And everyone I've talked to, it's just apparitions. I used to have this vision of someone in the desert. And when you look at their world, it's just a bunch of footsteps everywhere. It's a bunch of paths. They're completely safe. Whatever reason, they don't need to eat. And so they're imagining all of this constantly. And you see someone who's 80 years old and they have 1,000 paths that they've taken. If they thought they got into a plane and went somewhere, their mind is seeing the desert with rocks and things. And so when they need to sit in a chair, their brain pauses everything and makes the cab this way and that long so that when they sit down in the chair, they're sitting on a rock, you know. How many times have you This is just more metaphorical, physical examples here. But how many times have you thought you had one page from a book in your hand or one page of paper in your hand, and then you suddenly started looking at it and thinking, oh my gosh, maybe it is a little thicker than normal. No way. And you start picking on it and picking on it, picking on it, and all of a sudden, oh shit, it's two pieces of paper stuck together. Wow, I never knew. Thought it was one. That parsing exercise is what we're trying to do to our perception of every single sense we have in our body. Be aware, again, that your thoughts aren't necessarily all from your invention. You do not have to accept them simply because you have seen them or heard them. You could be hearing echoes from friends in the neighborhood. Hey, if we exist as a symbiotic relationship with this being, that when we take DMT, we seem to leave this being behind, scared and stranded, before we return, what would stop there being a race of beings that is purely spiritual, that maybe feeds on us like a barnacle feeds off of a whale or a ship? You know, puts itself on there and it uses the current of the water to get whatever it needs. Well, couldn't there be barnacles on us from the outside in the spiritual realm that's simply saying, make more anger, because that tastes delicious. And because I am sort of a babelfish into your brain, this thing, it could, you know, oh yeah, you should worry about that. You should worry about this. See what I'm saying? Once you start to parse out your feelings and figure out, well, when you speak, there's something magical that goes on. Especially if you're in a calm state of mind, when you speak, it is really who you have built yourself up to be as almost the summit of your expression and your thought. Now, you can be very angry inside your heart, let's just say, and control the way that you bring out and funnel everything together to create the reality perception of who you are. But if you want to somehow mediate the whirlwind inside your chest, inside your mind of all the different emotions, because I have them constantly, right? I'm sure you do too. You're in your work environment. You have a whole different batch of feelings and thoughts that you don't have when you're in your home environment, when you're with your loved one versus just cleaning out an old garage, right? What might be the case, and something I want to leave you guys with, is that perhaps, because, actually, let me rewind one second. The idea is, how come we're so bound to this reality? I mean, it does seem like this is the one, and everything else is just a figment of your imagination, right? You're daydreaming, your dreams, but this one's hardcore. It's where, if my finger gets cut off, it hurts like a son of a bitch, you know? My current thinking on this is the following. Because our energy that is us, which I would say we can call soul or spirit, it is adhering to this body. And so by adhering to this body, it adopts this reality. It is using these eyes and these ears to see and hear reality. It's using this body for touch and taste and smell. There are chemicals in your brain that will affect how you filter the sensory input, which is always coming in various forms of concussive shockwaves to your senses and your sensors and your body, and turn into electricity to be metabolized, right? But if we simply understand that we are probably a genderless being inside this vessel, adopting all the paradigms of reality in this particular world, but that when we sleep, when this thing goes to bed, right? You know, you can't stay at Disneyland 24 hours a day. It shuts down and then it restarts, and it's about an 8-hour stretch. Okay, that's when you're supposed to be in bed. You release yourself. You got to go relax. Why? I have no idea. When we do release, we dream. Because now no longer are we attached to this body. The body is sitting there breathing the deepest breaths it could possibly breathe. In fact, the breathing patterns largely dictate how the consciousness works. It's a very interesting reality that a lot of scientists have figured out. A lot of hypnosis has to do with breathing exercises. And it's weird. You can just breathe in a certain rhythm. As long as you can hold that rhythm, a lot of people can put themselves to sleep. They're completely conscious and not tired at all when they start this exercise, but they'll just go take a deep breath and just push it all out. Deep breath, push it all out, push it all out. And they just start getting tired because the body is trained Pavlovianly to interpret things like that. Why is it that we can daydream? When we are in this body, it's daytime. What happens when you daydream? What do you physically do in the world when you daydream? You will sit there and you will look at the wall or look out a window or look at your desk, and you will take the focal point of your focus, which has been up to that point focused on this reality. Your eyeballs have been focusing on objects in the room, and then all of a sudden, you have the 60,000 foot stare in one direction. You're no longer focused on anything in this room. Oh, interesting. So we change the focal point of the eyeballs, and then we have the ability to imagine. Interesting, right? I don't know if we can do that to our ears. Maybe the bionic woman could. So most of us serendipitously have a moment of imagination, unless you're a writer or an artist. But let's face it, writers and artists are fairly rare. I mean, it's not hard to find them, but they're definitely not the over 10% of the population slice of reality. So most of us allow those things to happen serendipitously. Oh, I just had a daydream. Well, why don't you turn that into a tool to exercise your ability to change reality? How many of you, when you put your head down at night on your bed, you have these just swimming, super intense, super fluidic daydreams of things that have either occurred, haven't occurred, but it's going a million miles a minute. Within a second and a half, you're able to perceive a complete reality, live in it for a little minute or two, and be out of it. Again, imagining history is and making it, validating it in your brain as if it really happened to you, and then finding out 4 seconds later that all that's just imaginary. Never happened. All right. Well, I use that as like almost an oasis. I'm laying down. I'm committed to sleeping. If my brain is swimming around like crazy, then I've got a place that I've gone for vacation that I can mess with. It's my oasis away from reality. Or it's my back door, like the movie Tron from 1982. They broke the wall of the game grid and 3 light cycles escaped the game grid. It's like characters from a book escaping the bounding paperwork of the book itself, becoming self-realized. Now, I don't think that we have to escape this at all, but maybe one of the next evolutionary steps of mankind is to start realizing that we're symbiotic, that we merely possess this vessel as it grows. We take good care of it. We should always take good care of it. We should help others take care of theirs, help them heal themselves, etc. But in the end, we shouldn't grow so utterly attached to this that we want to stay here and not go anywhere else. Now, does that mean we lose our burial rituals? Hell no, because we respect individuals that we had access to. Now, currently, if your grandfather passes away, unless you see ghosts, you can only assume that maybe your grandfather is there for you. You know, maybe you feel some intuition, maybe there's some signs, but you won't be able to grab them and put them back in a body. And the only time you're going to see them in any full form that they're in after they die is when you die out of your body and you basically transition and transcend into whatever form he or she went into. And you can commune again. I guess the gist of this episode is loosen up. loosen up your grasp on reality. I'm not saying become irresponsible or anything like that, but loosen up the tightness that is trying to hang on to this really intensely. And there might be a fraction of people who are sort of out of their mind and they could actually use a few hands on the guardrails. I'm probably not talking to them. Some people might be living literally on the razor's edge between this reality and some other reality, and they just seem crazy. I wanted to put this episode out before the year, the next 12 months occurs, because I think there's been a lot of research in this area. I think there's going to be some epiphanies coming out of the scientific community as we do play with reality one more time. I think it's going to be a good subject to talk about. You know, the Great Awakening is a small smidgen of this sort of thing, is to question reality a little bit. And so I feel like we're going to keep a little heartbeat on this throughout the show. This won't be obviously a heavily discussed topic, but hopefully there's a few things in here that when you live your life, you're going to go, oh yeah, I should probably try that thing. You know, let's meditate and then get all frustrated that things are messing with me. But instead of getting frustrated, I'm going to measure that input of distraction and recognize it in the five sense category of reality. And if you can come up with 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, whatever, do that too. Hopefully you feel me. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It has the audio, the video, a Patreon account, a locked Facebook group, and probably an expired store link, which will get refitted. I didn't have a lot of time to work on it this summer. I took my month break. At one point, you know, you just think about the show, you think about the show, and then you've got to execute. And so I just made the decision 2 days ago. It's like, okay, it's time to roll. Get the camera, shoot this thing, and get rolling. So we are rolling. All right, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.